Hey guys, welcome back to Mamas Chingonas podcast with Janet and Sandy. Thank you for tuning in to today's new episode. We truly appreciate your time. We're super happy and super excited to have Claudia Alarco on our episode today. She is a soon-to-be author of The Changing Face of Power. Her book will drop in December, so make sure you stay tuned to get yourself a copy. She is a speaker, author, and an agent of change. Thank you so much, Claudia, for being on our episode today. It's been an honor having someone with such a great history and background for you to be here and telling us your story and being able to share with the world a little bit more about who you are and your journey. Thank you.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for having me on. Like you said, my name is Claudia Alarco. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. And I am a soon-to-be published author, the author of The Changing Face of Power, with a set to publish this December. And I have, for most of my life have lived in the DC metropolitan area here on the East Coast. Proud Peruana, proud Latina. I was born in Peru and immigrated here to the DC metropolitan area in Maryland, to Montgomery County, Maryland, when I was around 5 years old. Así que fue una experiencia inmigrante súper, súper fenomenal, increíble, súper inclusiva. And then when I was 8, me and my parents, we decided to move to Puerto Rico, of all places.
Beautiful.
And fue, como se pueden imaginar, fue una cosa súper, súper tremenda, porque el cambio de cultura was just so shocking, right? My parents, we're all part of the Latinx community, but I think, there was no language barrier when we moved there, but there was sort of a culture shock. And so it was incredible because, as a Peruana immigrating over to Puerto Rico, I was 8 years old when we immigrated over. So it was just, incredible opportunity to sort of soak in a completely different side of la cultura latina that I had known until that point. I really started my career at the National Institutes of Health, where I spearheaded a diversity and inclusion initiative, a pipeline career program for, students who were underrepresented at the National Institutes of Health. I got there to the clinical center, and as you might know, NIH is so much part of the conversation right now with everything going on with the global pandemic. It's the nation's, gem in terms of clinical research. And, once I got there, I didn't really see a lot of people that look like us. So I, very naively said to my supervisor, I said, why aren't we, if part of our mission is to train the next generation of clinicians and scientists, why aren't we doing so? Right. So where is that gap? How can we bridge that gap? Thankfully she believed in the vision for a sort of a career pipeline program for students in high school, in the local high schools, that, we're interested and had the potential, but weren't the star students. But we were able to sort of really engage those students by talking to the people who know them best, right? The educators who are in the classroom. So it's been a really extraordinary journey since then. Months after we submitted that proposal, we got a call in November and we got funding for the program. So it was, we knew that it was, a really huge opportunity, but there was this really slim chance that we would ever get funding. We got funding. And so, 3 years of programming were incredible. I spent some time on Capitol Hill working for Congressman DeFazio. Spent some time at the Obama White House working for the Office of Presidential Personnel. And then spent some time in the advocacy space as well. Spent a little bit of time at the Human Rights Campaign as the associate director for workplace equality before, really jumping into this endeavor that is, becoming a first-time author. And so I think part of the inspiration story there was, realizing that I certainly did not, move in spaces of privilege, at least in my own home. My parents I come from a very working class family, and my mom's an orthodontic assistant and my dad is a maintenance supervisor. And so I think going into the spaces where I never really knew a quote unquote powerful Latino, right? And so opening those doors to my career into DC really opened my eyes to just how much excellence there is in our community. And how incredibly nuanced it is. I think part of what's been so incredibly rewarding for me in such a vulnerable trajectory in terms of writing this book is the Changing Face of Power is the working title, and so what we really want to set out and explore is this concept of Latinx excellence, and so what that really means, right? And I think in light of all the conversations that are happening around anti-Black racism and the movement around Black Lives Matter, it's been really important for me to dive deep and look inward and find and understand ways that even the concept of excelencia latina, like we say it, really upholds white supremacy, right? And we know it's no secret that it's so intertwined, right? I mean, historically, we've seen anti-Blackness ingrained in our Latinx culture. And I think as a non-Black Latinx queer person that identifies as she, her, and pronouns, it's really, I feel it's my responsibility and my duty to really uplift those voices and those stories. So what this book is now sort of growing to be is this conversation around, what is visibility, right? And I think that, and I can say to you both really frankly that, when I first set out in this book endeavor, it's really interesting because I really set out, I sought to seek folks who looked like me, right? And so finding those places where I can improve upon my own beliefs of visibility and sort of really pushing myself to be as inclusive as possible, is opening the conversation around how Latinx excellence really upholds white supremacy and anti-Blackness sentiments, and how we can start combating those beliefs and start the healing process, right? I mean, it's no secret that George Zimmerman, the person who shot and killed Trayvon Martin, was the son of an Afro-Peruvian mother, right, and a white father. And the cop who the police officer who shot Philando Castile, 32-year-old Philando Castile, was a Latino police officer, right? And I think it's really important that we look within and we look inwards to say, even as a person of color, even because I'm a non-Black, a Latinx person, how have I perhaps in any ways, either consciously or subconsciously, supported this sort of discrimination against Black people in America? And just how much, it's interesting because, we see a lot of posters in the protests that we see going on, and we see, Latinxes for BLM, and that, fundamentally ignores and invalidates existence of Black Latinxes, right? Like they exist as well. So it's been a really interesting journey to sort of look inward, and I think that it has its highs and lows, as anything that you really start and really want to see through this book. This journey towards authorship has been really nuanced and incredibly rewarding personally.
Yeah, well, that's, so amazing that your background of, everything that you have under your sleeve of everything you've done, and you having this
this power of wanting to write this book, and I think it's a great thing that you're doing. And for a lot of women or anyone listening who wants to write a book, what kind of advice would you give?
Yeah, I mean, listen, when I first thought about sort of embarking on this journey, there's a lot of self-doubt, right? That you say, am I a good enough writer? Am I worthy of putting something out like this in this way, in this platform? I would say 100%, like a person, and I think one of the things that, I wouldn't have been able to set out on this journey if it wasn't for the people who have opened those doors for me. And particularly, specifically, I'm talking about a specific program that exists at Georgetown University that I did had no idea that existed before I got involved in this program. It's called the Creators Institute at Georgetown, and it doesn't require for you to be any way affiliated to Georgetown University. It's this amazing Professor Eric Koester, who is an incredibly innovative and smart, energetic, and truly inspirational person who has set out to sort of conquer. We understand more than any other community, I think, just how much exclusion we've experienced in terms of being left out of the publishing world, right? Everything that happened with American Dirt at the beginning of this year really brought about the conversations around who is worthy of telling our stories, right? And who has historically been left out of the door in the world of the publishing. And so, I connected through Eric Koester through LinkedIn, and had been following his work for a little while, and sort of he started this program because, he saw that not a lot of young people, young writers were being given this opportunity. And so he really wanted to open these doors to really, a new diverse generation of young and innovative and very dedicated authors who are ready to put something out good into the world. I've learned so much. And I never knew that these opportunities, I could even have access to them, honestly. There's been such a huge learning curve. I started this program. You can start this program anywhere in the world. It's completely virtual. We have our development editors and we have our team with us. But most importantly, we have a community of authors who are in your same cohort, right? So I set out in this journey. I start in January with a publication date set to December. And so it was incredible to sort of, begin 2020 to say, listen, at the end of this year, before, the winter holidays, I'll be able to have the book in my hands. And it's been so rewarding because at the beginning of the program, we say it's once a week. We have our sessions together, and it's a really incredible community of authors who are also first-time authors who are a little bit older. I think right now, since we've open sourced the program, it's open to so many different folks from so many different walks of life. Latinx community is represented, and needs to be more represented in this program, and I think in the world of authorship in general. But I would say sort of seek out those resources, make sure, because I feel like for so many people, writing a book is something that is almost intocable, una cosa que ni siquiera tienes ni siquiera puedes decir, oye, tengo el derecho de pensar en esto porque es algo que es so out of reach. But knowing and understanding that there are people out there who are willing to open those doors for you, who are willing to vouch for you, who are willing to say, I am willing to put my relationships on the line so more people are opening these doors for themselves and putting out something into the world that is going to make this world a better, more informed place. I'd say do it and sort of seek those opportunities because those opportunities are out there. Just like, for anyone who's listening, who's interested in perhaps writing a book, for me, I never thought that I was an extraordinary writer, but I think what's beautiful about this journey is doing something that I fear. right? And I think a lot of times we only focus on doing things that we're good at. And I can imagine for both of you all starting this podcast, and yes, I've heard a couple of your episodes here and there, and it's been great. The content is so valued, and I think there are conversations that need to be happening that are so important, and really highlight the innovative leaders who are willing to do something that they're afraid of, right? And do it with courage and get good at it. I mean, as a writer, ever since now, I'm looking back to the stories that I, started writing at the beginning, of the year, and seeing just how far I've come, but also how vulnerable it is to write. It seems like, something so simple, but it's really terrifying, and I think it's so cathartic to look at yourself and have to look at yourself in a blank page. And say, what is it that I want to put out? Am I worthy? Right? And I think we embark on so many different things that question our own talents, and it's pushing forward and saying, yes, I am worthy. Like, a writer is a person who writes. That's it. That's the end of it. And so it's been amazing. So anyone who's listening, who is interested in writing a book, and this is interesting, so incredible, because I've, said to all my, my loved ones in my community, and all my girlfriends, I've said, hello, you need to write a book. You need to do it. For me, I have no spouse, I have no kiddos, and I'm like, mires, me tengo que poner las pilas, because the day that day comes, I want to be able to say, look at what your mama did, like putting something out into the world that it's meaningful. And what better way to do so by highlighting the excellence and the power and the visibility that the Latinx community has had thus far.
That's so awesome. Thank you so much for your words. It's very empowering too, because I think both Sandy and I have thoughts, of writing like our own stories, and it's so hard, sitting there and just, pouring out so much of your life journey into a blank page. It's like, gosh, where do you even begin? So, just having that willpower just to know that you are worthy of it, and just, typing away, and eventually it will just all come to life. I can't wait for December. I can't wait to read your book. I think that's awesome that you're doing that.
Thank you so much. And so it's such an interesting that we're sitting down to have this conversation, because I just shot the promotional video for the pre-sale campaign that is going to launch next month. So it's a really exciting time.
I
That's
bet. Yes.
amazing.
It
That's
is
so
exciting.
awesome.
And it's
Thank
such a
you.
crucial time. I mean, the timing for the publishing and the timing for, the drop of the book, it's actually a perfect time. People need to, like you touch base with a lot of, the Afro-Latino community, which would be the Latinx, right? There's a lot of them. I kind of feel like they're left out. And I think that it's important for us to always, realize that we're a culture of different people. We're just all mixed, and we're a melting pot, and my mom is Guatemalan, and there's a big community of Garifunas there, right? And I have friends with them, and I think that when it is true, when we're out there, we're supporting our Black brothers and sisters. And I also vend. I make my own skincare, and there's actually a group of vending who are Afro-Latinos, and they do feel excluded from the Latino community or from the, African-American community. And it's like they are part of. Some people want to put the stigma, Puerto Ricans are not Black or Dominicans are not Black, so they shouldn't be out there martyring for the cause. So I think it is important for us to touch that topic in the sense, that you acknowledge that, because not many people do. It's like we're either all Latinx or all Black lives. It's like there is a mixture of it, and that's not the case, because, like I said, I mean, I know Hondureños, I know Guatemaltecos, I know, people that are, I mean, they, you know, people have talked about them thinking they, dismissing them, thinking they don't speak Spanish, but yet they turn around and, mm-hmm. I mean, they're very fluent in Spanish, but in our countries.
Y si todo el mundo se queda sorprendido.
Sí, uh-huh. Sí, in our countries, sí, muy cierto, you know, and in our countries, I mean, I won't be surprised. I mean, I haven't been to a lot of parts of Mexico where I see a lot of the Afro community, but when I'm like in Guatemala, in Panama, in Belize, it's a beautiful thing, sí. You know what I mean, for me to see that. I think that it's a... It's just acknowledging that, you know, we're all people and we all have basically some of the same struggles, some more than others. But as Latinos, we constantly mm-hmm. in our own cultura, we discriminate against mm-hmm. the exactly. you know, the African-Americans or the negritos. And I mean, Mexicans call them prietos or el moreno, uh-huh. you know, and it's so sad. It's just so because we displace our own people. You know, and don't give them a form. Exactly. So I think it's muy importante. And I think I'm eager, you know, to read your book. I think I'm very intrigued. Just yesterday, I had a comment on one of my Instagrams, you know, with someone who was Latino and speaking on why mm-hmm. are we speaking up for the Black people and why are we doing this? And, you know, why what happened when they were beating up our elotero mans or they were doing this? And I was sitting there, you wow. know, and I had to respond to it. I've been really trying not to be as vocal because, you know, it's just it stirs up. But that's the problem. We're not vocal. And we don't stand up, you know, that's what the whole world is in shambles the way it is, because we're not speaking up, we're not touching these uncomfortable conversations, you know. And I spoke up, and I think that a lot of the Latinx community doesn't realize that if it wasn't for the civil rights movement and these protests back in the civil rights movement, we wouldn't be able to be in this country. Wouldn't be, our parents wouldn't be able to work, our parents wouldn't be able to, our kids wouldn't be able to get a education, you know. So they paved the way in a lot of ways, you know, but I think that we don't acknowledge that as a Latinx community, you know. So it's important mm-hmm. that we do see the Afro-Latino community as, you know, part of Latinx, and they can be both African-Americans and they can be both Latinx, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think acknowledging, I think, you know, even the term Latinx, right, I mean, requires that specificity. I feel like now that's why I'm saying, you know, I'm really trying to make an effort to say as a non-Black yes. Latinx mm-hmm. person, right? Because I feel like the term Latinx itself, tú no estás pensando in that, you know,
yeah,
you know, Afro-Panamanian or Afro-Peruano, you're not thinking about yeah, that person, right? And you're not thinking you're about that indigenous person.
That
you're
Latino.
Exacto.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. And so, you know, making sure that we're using the correct language, not say, oh, the Black people, pero sí, hay personas que son Afro y pertenecen a la comunidad Latinx. Mm-hmm. And we need to start seeing that. And we need to start doing the work of healing and doing the work of you know, the anti-racist to work within our own Latinx community.
Definitely. And I think that it's exposure and education. I think that a lot of people don't realize that, you know, for example, you know, I have African friends, you know, and I do carnival in the mm-hmm. summer, which is a big group of mm-hmm. Afro-Latinos and just African in general, the beats, everything. And las comidas son iguales. I mean, I went to Panama. They're very mm-hmm. similar to what we, people just don't realize how we are one people, how we're very similar in many ways, you know what I mean? And they are very mm-hmm. much a part and, you know, influence in the Latinx community. And it's kind of frustrating when a lot of people aren't educated on it. And that's why exposure and, you know, having these topics and having these forums to talk and, you know, for people can become more aware. And I think in nuestra cultura, mm-hmm. I think it's kind of like, we fear what we don't understand. You know what I mean? So we kind of just leave things alone and not bother with them because we don't want to, no le movemos al tapete. You know what I mean? We don't really want to have exacto. These conversations. You know, we don't want to, estamos bien. We're okay. We don't need to come out of our circle. You know, let's not even like, you know, I've had like, what does it concern you? Why would you go protest? Like, how, and I'm like, you know, it doesn't. And again, in our culture, I think it's very, our parents, you know, and our grandparents, they just figured we're going to work and we're going to live in peace and we're not going to bug anybody. So nobody bugs us. Just let mm-hmm. us be. And we don't want to become, you know, aware or even open up to something that we don't understand or we're not used to. It's uncomfortable and we don't yeah. like to be uncomfortable. But right now is the time to really be uncomfortable. The whole world is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So that's yeah. and you I know, think, change. We grow when we're uncomfortable. Yes. Is what I tell my 19-year-old. We're growing when we're uncomfortable. Exactly. That's a good place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's exactly why, Sandy, I wanted to write this book with an emphasis on the millennial and Gen Z generation, mm-hmm. right? Because I feel like our parents, our grandparents are sort of the generation that it's like, you know, put your head down, work.
Yes.
Try to assimilate.
Yes.
awful word, right? To assimilate to whiteness. Si te llama Jorge, make sure that you know, call yourself George. And so for Gen Z and millennial leaders, you see that, you know, we want to start we want to have those
definitely.
Arguments. We need to have those uncomfortable conversations at Thanksgiving con la abuela, con la tía, con el primo.
You guys will be the change, because you guys will be raising, when you guys start being parents, you guys will be raising kids, you know, which with the mentality of we stirred the pot, we made a difference, and those children will be, I'm praying, the generation that makes the change, the generation of the millennials and the, you know, my son's age, that they grow up with a different mindset, because yes, they stir the pot, they're vocal, they don't mind, you know, it's a very different way of raising. Even when I'm parenting, like my mom would say, why do you let your son speak that way? Or why do you, you know, why? And at the end of the day, it's because he has a voice. He has a say. I'm not just right because I'm the parent. You know what I mean? And they've been taught this, and they've been educated this way. So therefore, it's like, it's okay that you don't like and agree with me, and it's okay for you to be uncomfortable. You don't have to agree with me. That's the beauty of it. You know what I mean? And we can have these dialogues. And my mom, who's, of course, she's a baby boomer, you know, has problems with this because she doesn't feel that they shouldn't be opinionated. She doesn't feel that they should speak up, or she doesn't feel, even if it's it may seem disrespectful, because kids should do what they're told. You know what I mean? Because we say so. And unfortunately, as parents, one of the most humbling experience for me has been admitting when I'm wrong, right? Because that's the beauty of being a parent. You know, you have to admit when you're wrong, because you're teaching your child that it's okay to be humble. It's okay to admit when you're wrong, and you got to move from that and make a better choice the next time. As a parent, you hope that that's what you engrave in your children's head, right? And so when I'm hearing him be vocal, and he's talking, and he speaks up, and he's just, you know, like, no, it's not okay for you to speak to me in that tone. You know, I understand you're mad. My mom will be like, that's not okay. You know, he doesn't tell you how to speak. But again, you guys will be that generation that makes those waves and makes the change. Because if you look around, who's out there protesting? It is young generation. You know what I mean? My 20-year-old cousins, my 20-something-year-old cousins, you know, my you know, early teens, you know, early adulthood, where they're out there. And that'll be the change, because you guys are growing up with not having to assimilate. You guys have kind of made your own, paved your own way in some sort, you know? And I think that you're not as maybe looking at the color all the time, and looking at the difference, but embracing it, because you don't see the difference. Because my son has a lot of Black friends, you know what I mean? And they all hang out. He's an athlete, and he doesn't see the difference. And they even say things that I would say that's inappropriate, but they're so secure in themselves that they're not, they understand that it's okay. We're different, and they accept the differences. We're with us. You know, my son has first generation, you know, friends that are here, first generation, you know, from wherever their, you know, their parents are from. And a lot of the kids, they're their parents, they don't accept the Black kids going into the house. They're kind of like stood by it. And my friend's sons are like, well, it's because we don't have Black friends, or we don't know Black people, you know, and things of that nature. And I'm just like, wow. Where my son is like, well, and those kids are breaking the cycle, because now those little Black boys go to the house, and the parents are learning to accept it, but not really. But the kids are, the kids don't care. You know what I mean? The kids see no difference. So that's the beauty of that. So I am, you know, I'm 42, so I'm just waiting to see, you know, how this all transcends when my grandkids, you know, are teenagers, and how it all, I'm hoping that's going to be the shift in my son's offspring and my grandchildren's offspring, where the world will shift, because we will be more accepting, because there's more awareness, and ustedes le movieron al tapete, you know?
Claro, claro.
So definitely, you know?
And I think so much of that is because we are the generation of sons, daughters, and non-binary children of people who we've seen, right? Romperse la espalda, right? And stay quiet. Like, imagine if that's your fuel wanting to move forward. We're like, oh, really? There is no hero? I put my own cape on, right? Like, oh, de verdad, no hay una persona que esté representando. I run that for that office. You know? I ask for that job, right? That fearlessness. I mean, look at about, you know, the entire movement of undocumented folks, right? Look at all the, I mean, they didn't have the power to vote, yet they were able to move the president of the United States on something that was so essential on their existence in this country, right? I mean, it's just this really, you know, the resilience, the fearlessness, la valentía de no tener miedo de, you know, you know, como tú dijiste, Sandy, faltar respeto. I feel like so much of the older generations is like, stay quiet because you're respectful. For me, like, you know, I was having this really difficult conversation with my grandmother, where, you know, a lot of anti-blackness, you know, sentiments come out of her mouth. And I remember her saying when I was a little girl, don't go out tanning. You're light, you can't turn brown. And I remember her looking at my other cousins, her own granddaughters, and saying, look at her skin, right? Your skin isn't like hers. Mm-hmm. Let's keep it that way. And confronting that and wanting to heal from that and not getting a great response, right? And she's like, well, why don't you just soy viejita, déjame en paz, right? Déjame, like, respeta. I mean, I'm like, porque te amo y porque te respeto. I don't want you to leave this earth with that in your heart and in your mind. But it's you know, rooted in love. If I didn't love her, I would let her stay this way, right? Let her have these thoughts and these beliefs and these, you know, prejudices towards, you know, not only, you know, and she said, you know, a lot of immigrants from Venezuela are immigrating to Peru, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they no longer have the ability to sustain themselves in their own country. And like so many of us who have immigrated to the United States have immigrated to Peru and so many different parts of America Latina. And, you know, she's there saying, ah, pero es un caro. And I'm like, abuela, ¿tú no te acuerdas que nosotros emigramos a este país? And your daughter immigrated to Spain and your other daughter immigrated to Russia. Like,
it's the whole
no hace ningún sentido, right?
Huge deal. Even I have family members who, you know, are Trump supporters, and I'm thinking to myself, and you know, they want immigration reform, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, y'all. If that was the case back then, you know, you don't realize that you're here because you migrated to this country, just like other people want to migrate and, you know, make a way for their family and make a better way of living. And so, yes, you are so right. I mean, I was always in, you know, in my family, both sides, you know, kind of. I was really light skinned when I was a baby, and I was just very cute because I was light skinned, right? And now I see the colorism in our own culture. And you're right, those, you know, biased, you know, comments or these things that are made. I mean, I know people who basically, you know, they keep their kids out of the sun because they don't want them getting darker. You know, my son, you know, he's a brown boy. You know, I'm fair skinned, and you know, when he was younger, you know, he would have uncles or people tell him like, dude, get out of the sun, you're gonna get black. You know, and it's like, and it's this thing that stayed with him really, because he's sometimes like, dang, remember you could tell me that? Like, that's all messed up. You know, and it's like, you know what I mean? So things that people say,
and he calls you out,
and things that people say, you know, and they don't realize that these little comments, these little degrading remarks, these little anti-Semitism things, you know, that you say in your home, that's really, you know, it's building the character of some of your children. And that's why we, you know, sometimes our kids, they fear what they don't know, because they've just learned what their parents have told them. And when they're not, you know, exposed to other people or different people, different cultures, different things, it becomes a problem. And people are scared of what they don't know. We fear the known, and you know, and it can get further. And that's why it is important. And with my mom, I have these dialogues. I mean, in our culture, you know, you have the grandfather from Spain. I know we've all heard that, you know, we all descend of Spaniards, you know, at some point. And I get in trouble because I'm like, I mean, I don't care. I don't want to be a descendant of Spain. I rebuke my Spaniard blood. Give me my Indian blood, you know? My Aztec blood. I'm not into it. And people, I want nothing to do with my Spaniards. You know, I don't want the European. I mean, not that it's bad, but it's just how I feel. But I only know that because I've been educated, right? I went to school. I took Chicano courses. I took African-American courses. I have no degree. But of course, that education you got in those courses, you took, they educate you, and they allow you to see things in a different light. You know what I mean? Definitely, because like a whole facade is just removed from your eyes. The blindfold is taken off. You know what I mean? And you really start to, for yourself, come to realize that everything your parents might have said, everything that you might have heard from the tios and the tias, and what you know in your little bubble in your comfort zone isn't reality. Right. And I got in trouble because when my son was in fourth grade, he had to do the whole California mission. And I went into fourth grade and my son was presidential honor roll. And I said, my son will not be doing a diorama on one of the missions, plain and simple. And they were like, what do you mean? He has to. It's part of the curriculum. I go, well, he can do it if you guys teach him exactly what happened at the missions.
kids. And they were just completely like blown away by me, you know, even having the audacity to walk into such a grade school and make that demand. And I said, he won't be presenting, she could, he won't get his grade. And he's a 4.0. He got, you know, the Obama President Award every year at the end of the year, and he won't get it. I said, well, we have to find an in between. I said, because if I take this all the way to the district, by the time I get there, I go, he's not going to get his grade. I said, so there has to be an in between. I go, he will not. He will not. That's just bottom line. He will not participate, but you need to give him a different assignment, or you need to grade him on the factual assignment that he's presenting to you, because the grade isn't on the class presentation. The grade is on what you give. And she said, fine, he can be absent that day from school on presentation day. He can turn in whatever you think he needs to turn in, and I will grade it based on the facts. Well, he got an A, right? But she didn't let him present the class. She didn't let him let, you know, the rest of the student. I get it. You know, not everybody wants their 9-year-old kids being educated on these beautiful, you know, field trips that they take into these, you know, missions are these beautiful places, but it's a place of torture, right? Nobody wants their 9-year-old to know these things. Well, I didn't care if my 9-year-old. No, my mom thought it was crazy. Mm-hmm. My husband at the time thought I was the craziest person in the world for even making such a demand. But shit, it's true. You know what I mean? I had to wait till I was 21 years old and pay for a damn, you know, unit, you know, to do 3 units to get this information. I had no clue. And I was just, you know, I went to a continuation high school, and they're a lot more liberal there. So my teachers were more one-on-one. So our teachers kind of really like educated us and like gave us the hard knocks of what things happened, because it wasn't that, you know, we were bad kids according to what the stigma puts on us. So really nobody was really caring what we were exposed to or not. But in those moments, they exposed us to a lot of things. You know, they took our eyes off of the blindfold off of our eyes and let us see things for what they were. And I'm so appreciative of that, because I'm able to completely see, you know, the world, people in a whole different light. And I think that that's the beauty of it. And that's what I'm passing on to my kids. However, I can't say the same for the rest of the people in my family, because I am the rebel. I am the odd man out, because I'm constantly, you know, voicing my opinion. I'm constantly making waves, and I'm constantly, you know, always wanting to start problems, or always wanting to go against the grain, as they say, you know, porque no se puede quedar callada. I'm like, because I'm not. I'm just simply not. I won't. Not when I have this, you know, this world of information. My neighbor went as far as telling me one day, why do you let black kids swim in your pool? There's always black kids over there. Wow. But you don't allow, he's a straight Mexican, you know, older gentleman. Why don't you allow my kids to come swimming in the pool? And we're raza, you know? And I'm like, you know, wanna know why? Because between those black kids and your kids, the huge difference. They're good black kids. Just because their skin color is darker than yours doesn't mean that, you know, they're my business behavior. I know their parents, they're professionals. You know, they're educated. They go to school. They educate their kids, right? They're very well manner. They're not bad kids. Your kids are constantly in the principal's office. Your kids are constantly, one of them took a BB gun to school. One of them is running up a mic. I go, look, if you want them to swim, I don't have a problem with that. But guess what? You can come sit down and watch them. I'm not watching your kids, and my sons are not going to sit out there and play with your boys. Bottom line. And it was a big fiasco. And my mom and my husband were like, I cannot believe you told the man that. I go, well, I can't believe the man had the audacity to ask me such a thing. That's the problem.
Exacto.
I go, why am I the one in trouble when he shouldn't have even brought that up? Who gives a shit if they're yellow, blue, yellow? You know, I don't care. But you see, that's what he's looking at. Like, damn, she allows them black kids in the pool, but doesn't allow my own kids in the pool who are her people. So, you know, and my husband and my mom, you know, and, you know, a couple of my aunts and uncles are like, she really does make waves. And it's just not that I want to. And it's not that I'm being racist against my own people. I'm just stating facts. And I'm not going to side with one because they're my people, even if they're wrong. That doesn't make any sense. That's why, again, we have some of the systematic issues that we have. You know, and I'm very stern on that. You know, that's why with my son, I'm very open, and he's very open to everybody. And I think in a lot of our older school cultures, you know, our older grandparents and our parents, they're just now like kind of like standing back and taking a look. My grandma's 91 as to what's going on in the world right now. And I think that even her mind is changing a little bit. She's not racist, but we have these things about us where we stay, make comments, or we say things, you know, no, porque allá hay mucho negro, no vaya para allá. You know what I mean? Está peligroso. Those little comments, you know, where now they're trying to say like, pobrecitos, like George Floyd really saw, it really showed what happened with him, really showed just how people really, you know, do treat the Afro-Latinos and African-Americans, you know? And like I told my grandma, now you're starting to see it because now you're being exposed to it. People are making waves. See, if people didn't make these waves, you wouldn't realize just how bad it is. I said, but because now it's in your face and you can't turn away from it because it's right in front of you everywhere you look. So now we have to address it. And she was like, no, tenés razón, mija, like you do, you know, yo nunca había pensado así. And it's true, it's smack in her face. You know, my grandma gets on her phone, so she has a Facebook that she talks to her kids on. It's on there. She turns on the news. It's on there. You know, we're talking about it. So now she has no other choice but to kind of come to and start the realization of like, hey, this is a group of people who have been, you know, treated bad. I have been, you know, part in that, or I have discriminated in some way or sense. And that's the beauty of this. Of course, it's madness and everybody is like, the world is at a really shitty place, but it's also a lot of growth in it. You know what I mean? And that's why you're...
And there's so much hope. Definitely. Like even that conversation with your grandmother, yes. Like, eso no hubiese pasado hace 6 meses, hace un año.
Yes, definitely. You know, it's a lot of hope. And I even see it with our kids, and, you know, and people are really uncomfortable. And that's why I just told my mom, it's good. It's good that the whole fucking world is uncomfortable. I'm glad that they are, exactly. You know, and this is how, you know, people of darker skin, black people, I said, feel every day when they have to go out there, uncomfortable knowing that they're not going to get treated the same way, knowing that their rights may be violated, knowing that their sons and their, you know, husbands are in danger every day. So it's good that everybody's uncomfortable because it's a taste of what the black community has been going through for years. It's just, you know, now it's blatant and you can't hide it anymore. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. And there's so much hope that this isn't just going to be a weak thing, right? I mean, we see more and more people going out to the streets, more and more people wanting to educate themselves. Like, I really don't think that we'll be going definitely. Back.
There's
no regressing, so much hope,
this.
And
there's no regress, and we can only
exactly
from this. I completely agree with that. Just like in general, with anything we do that we've been proven to ourselves that can't be done or that has been done, there's nothing that tells us that we're not going to move forward from it because it's already been done. It's already that gate, the floodgates are already open. So we're just going to move forward from this. And I'm not saying it's going to change everything, but definitely there's no regressing from this moment in time. This is a shift. This is a huge shift.
Right. Yes. And I think it also exposes the potential of us to really make meaningful, impactful change within our own home.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, as a parent, everything you say and do, your child is watching.
And it's been, me and Jenny had this conversation the last week. It's been a huge impact in our home because we're talking about it and it's opening these forums of communication and it's seeing how uncomfortable we are within ourselves, different things. So, of course, you're 100% right on that.
Yeah. And it even, I mean, Sandy, it even, you know, really opened my eyes for me when I think about, you know, my journey to parenthood, how different that will be, right? All these different comments that I heard growing up, even though they were not pervasive, they were meaningful and impactful. And I'm like, you know, how I want, I mean, as, you know, a queer, pan cis Latina, I think to myself, my goodness, my home will look completely different than the home that my parents envisioned their daughter to have with her kids, right? I mean, when I think about my journey to parenthood, I think about fostering, right? I think about adoption. And that's the root, not because, ay, mira, ya no me queda ninguna otra opción, right? No me puedo reproducir con otra mujer o con otro ser humano. But it's more like, eso es exactamente el camino que quiero tomar.
Yes.
Right, hay tantas personas específicamente, at least in my area, there are so many children who need loving homes, right? And what it means to adopt, you know, perhaps, you know, mi papá, estamos hablando de esto todo el tiempo, and they're like, de verdad, Claudia, estás pensando, you know, algún día, and I'm like, of course, it's in my 10-year plan, right? I know I'm in my 20s, I know I'm not in a, you know, financial, mental, psychological place to become a parent just yet, but that's obviously something that I want for my life, and it's always been a dream of mine that I want to see through. And, you know, they're like, well, what does it really mean si tú quieres un adoptar a una persona que es afroamericana, que a un niño que es un afroamericano, un bebé, eso qué significa, va a significar para nosotros. And I'm like, well,
you're gonna have a grandkid.
All the things, this is the, let me send you a Word document of all the things and phrases that you're not allowed to say around my future child.
Definitely. Right?
And compartir ese Word doc with and everyone family, in definitely. Our family. Right?
Can you
and
imagine then, that great shift?
So I'm like, prepárate.
And it would be amazing because you're going to break those, you know, because they're going to love the child because it's yours and they're going to realize that there's nothing wrong with being black or there's nothing wrong with being, you know, Afro-Latino. And they're going to, because it's that's, and you know what, everything you just said is really, really beautiful because that would be the absolute shift. You know what I mean? That a lot of people need, the whole world needs, you know, if they had that mindset, you know, because you're right, you're completely breaking those barriers. You're completely going off the path that our parents envisioned us, right? And yet it's the beauty of it, because it's a beautiful thing, you know, and fostering and adopting. I mean, I don't, my baby is 19 years old. He's grown. And sometimes I think yesterday I was carrying my cousin's baby. She has four kids and people are like, gosh, she looks so good with the baby. There's another, why don't you have another baby? And I'm like, I would think of adopting or fostering a child at any day, but you know, I don't know. If they were little, I'd keep them forever, but I don't like the teenage part of it. That's a very transitioning age. It's not as fun to parent teenagers and young adults. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. I raised my stepson. He's 24. That's why I'm like, I think I'm good, you know, but, wow. That would be definitely the beauty of it. My goal for many years was to run a boys home, underprivileged boys home. That was my goal that I, you know, for many years. And, I was an athletic director for a football underprivileged, you know, area to say, you know, and I loved being around the boys and the boys loved being around me. And, you know, as my son got older, the boys got older and they grew and we grew together. And it was always where my house, they'd hang out, we'd talk, we'd have these conversations, you know, and it was always, you know, to hear them. Because, you know, as you get, they get older, you become more open to when you see them, you know, as teenagers, what they shouldn't do or didn't do, and you share stories with them. And they realize, like, wait a minute, you know, and it, so it's amazing, the adopting and helping, you know, and you know, wanting to build somebody, you know, and making a choice to be a parent, because we don't choose our children, right? We don't get to do that. But fostering and adopting, you do. Exactly. You made a choice, you know, you're choosing to be that parent to somebody that was a child.
And every day, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we don't get to pick.
And even having those conversations around, mira, hay muchos niños que necesitan estar en un hogar, and they're not babies, right? That means perhaps adopting a child who's 12, who's 16, who's 5, right? And just how terrifying that is when I bring that up in conversation with the rest of my family. They're like, pero, they're gonna, like, ¿qué pasa si traen traumas? And I'm like, that doesn't make them unworthy of love, right? Everyone has baggage. You know, even biological parents do as much trauma as
right. Like, parent, my son's 19, and I see some of the things he deals with because of factors that me and my husband might have, you know, impacted on him. So you're 100% on right on that. I mean, even by line, we could be so, I mean, messed up sometimes by things that our parents or grandparents did on our, they're our own family, right? So you're definitely 100% on that.
And so, but it's you know, it's terrifying. They're like, how are we gonna you know, be around them, or how you know, it's like you earn someone's love, right? I mean, it's interesting because biological parents in many ways, it's such an interesting journey, because you don't have to earn the love. It's innate, right? It's natural. It's biological. But imagínate having to earn a child's love. Right, having to earn their trust, right, having to show up every single day, even when it's hard, you know, and even when I think about, you know, it's hard for me because I don't have a partner, obviously, right now. I don't have, you know, a spouse, and I'm not married, but it really opens my eyes to say, mira, even if that person doesn't come around, I will be an independent parent, right? Not a single parent, because I feel like our society is just so obsessed with, you know, I would argue heterosexual partnerships, heterosexual marriages. But I think just marriages and relationships in general, that I can't, you know, even the word a single parent, right? Como si le faltara algo. And so I think that's really, really interesting, as it, you know, it completely shifts the way that, you know, a child needs someone's love. And if it's two people, great. And if it's an entire community, even better. But I think it really shifts our perception of what we think of when we think of parenthood.
And we're at a time where,
you know, building perception,
you know, is changing. And that's a beautiful thing, you know, that we're breaking off these doctrine ways of thinking, because we're still doctrine thinking that this is the way it should be. And when it's not, and it's anything from what the doctrine taught us, or just like religion, right? When we deviate the wrong way, it's considered deviant. It's considered, you know, in a sense of it being unnatural, or, you know, just not normal. And that's not the norm. And therefore we have these, you know, condemning mindsets when it comes to it. It's so traumatizing when you think about that, because we're supposed to be a loving people, right? And yet we condemn everything when we feel that they've shifted or they've deviated away from what we taught them or what the way it's supposed to be. And so I think that definitely, I mean, listening to you, really, you know, you know, it's really empowering to hear all of this, because I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And I mean, hopefully, you know, we'll continue following. I can't wait for the shift to take place. And I can only imagine the transitioning in your home and in your, you know, proximity of your family. That's breaking barriers. And that's the beauty of it. Because I mean, as sure as a queer Latina, yeah. And that was a barrier you already broke. There was some discomfort there. I can only imagine, right? In the beginning, it was hard. I mean, in our community, it's just hard. I think it's a little bit more open now sometimes. But even then, I think that we still have this horrible stigma on it. You know what I mean? For many years, I'm not going to lie to you, I was in doctrine that, you know, that's a sin, and it's again God's, right. You know. But then it's like, as I got older and I evolved, well shit, I'm having marital sex, that's a sin too, right? You know, premarital sex, you know what I mean, that's a sin too, right? Like, who said, but then the Bible says not one sin is greater than the other. So of course then I started making my own mind and thinking differently and just being more accepting and really understanding. I have a really good friend who I grew up with, you know, and she's, you know, a lesbian, and she's one of the, I mean, you know, amazing people. She has the biggest heart in the world, and she's a lot better than other people. And I think that helped me to realize, like, God can't love her any less than he loves me. She's probably a better kind-hearted person than I am. You know what I mean? And so it just made me make my own acceptance as to what getting off the doctrine, you know. And I think that's important, that we get off of the doctrine and we teach the new generation and our offspring to get off that doctrine. I'm not saying I'm against, let's overthrow the church, or I'm against God. Definitely not. I'm a huge believer in God. You know, I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person. And that's what I hope to teach my children, and my son can realize that with his offspring, you know. And like I said, I'm intrigued to really see, you know, the changes you'll make in your own general, you know, little circle of your people and your family, because that's where it starts, you know. That's where it starts.
Yeah, definitely. And even as a queer looking, you know, I recognize so much of my privilege, right? When I came out to my parents when I was 19 years old, I never knew before until I met this one specific woman. And, you know, I'm so aware of the fact that I'm a feminine presenting queer person, right? I'm a cis feminine presenting queer person. Perhaps if I was masculine presenting, if I was androgynous, you know, if I presented my gender identity in that way, how would the perceptions of my parents and how accepting they were have shifted? Right? Porque me encanta usar tacos. I love to wear heels. I love to, you know, wear makeup and curl my hair and lashes. And I'm as feminine presenting, you know, stereotypically feminine presenting as possible. And, you know, the first person that I introduced them as my partner when I was 19 years old and I came out to them was a white woman, right? And it was a very privileged, you know, top 5% in the country white woman, right? Who came from a lot of money, and how perhaps the shift and the acceptance of my parents would have been different if it was not as privileged, right? Or a black woman, like, how much would have stirred the pot? Exactly. Like, perhaps I wouldn't have gotten that acceptance. What if I was, you know, I wore Timberlands and I was so masculine presenting. Lo aceptaría mis papás, right? And I think that opens my eyes to, you know, and I tell them all the time, mira, you know, because I think when I first came out, they were like, okay, pero make it really clear for us. Is it going to be a woman coming through those doors? Is it gonna be a man coming through those doors? Like, por lo menos danos un poco de certainty. I'm like, you have raised me, and I think it was so beautiful to have this conversation with my parents, because my parents are first cousins, and they met when they were, you know, in their early 20s. They, you know, didn't grow up together. Yeah. They, you know, it's just like, mira el primo, you know, this is your first cousin, then you meet them and imagine, you know, having feelings for that person. Yeah. Also knowing that society is completely against you, right? The church doesn't accept it. Your family doesn't accept it. Perhaps you have your own feelings about it too, that I shouldn't be in love, but I'm a product of two people who fought for love that was seen as unworthy, right? Who was seen as wrong, who was seen as sinful. And I'm a product of that, right? Of, you know, going on 30 years now of two individuals who found love, who happened to have the same last name, you know, and mi abuelitos, my grandfathers, are brothers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting when I was given these assignments to do my family tree, and there were so many different lines going so many different places.
I just put that two and two together, and when you said that, everyone thinks it's a typo.
Yeah. Yeah, Alarico. It's because, I'm so proud of that. And, a lot of people, throughout my upbringing have seen my last name, which is why I'm so proud of my name because of what it represents. And, growing up, so many people have said, made the offhand comment of, haha, Alarico, are your parents cousins or whatever? And I stand them in the front of the room, and actually, they are. And this is what it is. And the people are just like,
Definitely, it's a
so
stigma. It's a stigma. That's why
because
I'm
no
sitting here
one
thinking, like,
usually
props
has
to
the
you
courage to
for
say
really
that, right? You're
accepting
just
that
like, you
and
kind of
owning it. You know
hide
what
it.
I mean?
Yeah.
Literally owning it, you know, and that's a beautiful, like I said, there's a lot of growth in
Oh,
you for
100%.
accepting those things and really, you know, taking the stigma off of it.
Yeah, because it's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, it's truly, I don't, it's always been my parents love each other and they also have, similar, our families are very much together. And it's interesting because I'm like, Papa, where do you find a woman like this? Go encontrar una mujer tan increíble como mi, my dad jokes around. He's like, La Sagrada Familia. And we laugh. And I'm like, well, that's definitely not an option for me. But yeah, no, it's so interesting to be in that position and to be proud of it, which is why when I decided to come out of the closet, or I wasn't really necessarily in the closet. I literally met this person and I called my dad and I was like, creo que tengo sentimientos para con ella, papá. Y my dad didn't even bat an eyelash. It was just. It was just what it was. And, but my mom was really hard to come around because I think oftentimes, queer folks have a really hard time with the parent that is the same gender as them, right? So if I'm, a woman who is dating another woman, I have a more difficult time with my mother because she sort of imagined, a prince, shining armor and y todo eso. Así que it was really hard for her. But at the same point in time, it's so beautiful to have that conversation
Definitely,
and be
you're a product of love
like,
is
love
love.
is love. You've taught me this from the day that I was born. You've embodied exactly. I'm a product of that. You never said, you can only love this kind of person or with this kind of educational background or this kind of socioeconomic status or this, It wasn't that at all. So when I said to her, perhaps it's a woman today, but I really do not see gender when it comes to love for me. And I can't promise you that it always will be a woman, right? I can't promise you that it'll always be a man either. Perhaps it's a transgender non-binary person, right? And so that was really beautiful too for me to say, it's not just sort of my preference for a specific gender, but it's really just that when I fall in love with someone, it's because of who they are, not what they have in between their legs or how they identify or any of that. Being able to say it to my parents, and that's partly thanks to you, thanks to the upbringing that you've given me on just how open-minded I can be. And Sandy, you said something that really resonated with me, and I 100% am with you on this when you talked about your kids. And you them not seeing any difference, where I was brought up in the same way, but I would say that I want to change that when I raise my own kids. Because for me, because I was surrounded by so many different, diverse people, I was taught to not see race. I was taught to not see socioeconomic status. And for me, I don't want to be colorblind, right? I don't think that that upbringing was right for me. It's I honor your cultural background, right? It's not like I disregard it. And I think that's where sometimes we get it wrong, where, my parents certainly got it wrong. They're like, pero no veo una diferencia, right? It's all the same. And it's like, it's not all the same. And that's what's beautiful about it, right? That we can say, I honor and value, and I want to educate myself on your culture. And the same way that I don't want you to disregard mi Latinidad, right? I don't want you to disregard, I don't want you to be like, oh yeah, you and I are the same, because we're not. And that's what's beautiful. But where we sometimes, I think, want to go with that is there is no superiority or inferiority, right? And that's where, anti-racist work really means not considering a racial, cultural group to be superior than anybody else, right? we're on the same level, but I think it's really about honoring and celebrating, right? In the same way that we talk about tolerance. I don't want you to tolerate me. You know, as you know, I worked for the Human Rights Campaign. We never said tolerating, right? We said celebrating. Mm-hmm. We don't want, I mean, you tolerate zits when you're a teenager, right? You tolerate having braces. You don't tolerate the existence of another human being. You celebrate Definitely. It, you honor it, and you make sure that you educate yourself on it. So I think that's a really, you know, valuable point to bring up.
Even having this conversation with you, you know, that's why these platforms are so, I think, amazing, and that's the beauty of them. I mean, hearing you speak and owning really the fact that your parents are first cousins, that not that I ever gave it a thought, because it's just something that, you know, we don't really speak on, but it made me see things different. You know what I mean? And that's the beauty of it, because it's like speaking and talking, having these conversations and this dialogue. It's like, really, I admire you for really owning that, something that has been this stigma, you know what I mean? And that, you know, we speak on. So I think that that's a beautiful thing in itself. And like you said, not tolerate, but accept, you know what I mean? And that's, yeah, we don't have to tolerate, because that is such a negative condemnation, you know? It's really accepting. So, I mean, kudos to you, and hats mm-hmm. off. Definitely. I mean, you've empowered me in that, shifting my thought on that a little bit. I'll be open, very frank with it. You know, I had never seen it in the light that you have actually presented it, and it's a beautiful thing. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. And it's so interesting, their journey and talk, because they spent, you know, most of their 20s being like, we love each other, but on a blah, 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 we can't possibly make this work. What will our parents say? You know, and my mother's side of the family disowned her, because they were like, what? You're not. I mean, this is so shameful. And a lot of people were against my parents' love. And they finally, you know, and there was so much fear around, my God, what is that child going to look like, right? Like, what kind of monstrete is going to come out? And, you know, of course, I come out. And I look the way that I do. And people are like, what's going on, right? And so finally,
are you an only child?
When I was born. And they're like, actually, I'm an only child. Yes, I am. And so it was really beautiful to,
and look at least, you, I mean, you're doing amazing things. For my existence, you're out there doing things, you're out there, you know, really putting yourself out there, educated, you know, bringing awareness. So, I mean, it's like a really slap in the face to everybody who really might have thought, you know, esa niña, que va a ser, como va a salir esa niña? Now, look at you, you're empowered. You know, you're out there helping other people. You're writing a book. And so they must be like, oh, wow. You know, completely against all the odds that everybody had, you know, had the perception of, you know?
I know.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah. And I don't blame them, right? I feel like we never talk about these things. So whenever the instances that we do think, oh my God, first cousins coming together, and I still hear it, and it's hurtful, but you have a choice whether to quedarme callada. And so many times it could have been easier to stay silent. It could have been easier to be like, oh yeah, it was just a coincidence. Que papas tiene one, you know, last name, or I can have the courage to look that person in the face and sort of, like you said, sort of present it in this light that is authentic to my story, and then that I think can have an impact on other people. And in no way do I, you know, assert that I know exactly, because I didn't have to live through that, right? My parents did. My parents had to go, when they got married, ask special permission to the Pope, right? To be able to casarse religiosamente, have a wedding in a church, in a Catholic church, with a Catholic priest. And so it's very interesting the way that they talk about it too, because, you know, I think that although I have done so much work of, for me, it's never been a shame. Perhaps I've felt a little bit of shame coming from how the way that my parents, and I wish my parents were as prideful as I am about it, because I certainly feel this way, but perhaps sometimes I do see that, you know, that yes, we're in love and this is an incredible love, and look at how, you know, happy and meaningful this love and transformative this love has been. And also, it probably wasn't the right thing. And also, it's not something that we want for you.
Yeah.
That has probably been the most difficult part of it, as a product of that love, to be like, Yes, yes, you're amazing, and yes, our love is amazing.
But it's because of the shame, I believe, they grew up with, and they know how difficult it was with losing their loved ones or your mom being disowned. That as a parent, you know, I can only speak as a parent. You want to protect your children from those same things that haunted you or people, you know, made you feel indifferent about, you know. So from that, that's coming from a parent's perspective, generally, in sense that they just want to protect you from that. Not that they want to teach you that it's bad. I believe they just, their perception that they want to protect you and protect their child from what they had to endure because of the stigmas or because of the discriminatory remarks or because of what people said, you know. So that was from a place of love, you know. But obviously, I mean, they raised this very powerful, you know, strong-minded, you know, daughter, and I mean, you obviously, you know, you march to the beat of your own drum, and that's a beautiful thing, you know.
I love that. Yes, I love what you just told her. That was awesome.
Thank you so much.
I really I'm so happy with this episode. I think it is bringing awareness in so many different levels. So thank you so much for opening your heart and soul and telling us so much about you and, you know, your life. I think that's awesome for you to share that. So thank you.
So there you have it, guys. The changing face of power. Claudia, thank you so much for being part of our podcast. We appreciate your time. Everyone tuning in, thank you so much. Make sure you follow her on Instagram under Claudia Alarco A1 or under www.claudiaalarcoalarco.com. I will leave her information so you guys can make sure you stay tuned for her book. And hopefully once her book is published and we've all read it, we would love to have Claudia back on our podcast talking about the greatness of her book and all the amazing changes that have happened since. So thank you guys again for tuning in, and we hope you guys hear from us next week. You guys take care and stay safe.